choir. That was beautiful. "It's a treasure more valuable than gold," the young girl said. "I wouldn't trade it for anything." They gathered for a family celebration. Oh, it wasn't a birthday, an anniversary, a wedding, or a birth. They were celebrating a death. That's right, a celebration of dying. I know that may sound odd to some of you because we tend to think of death and dying in that time as a sad time. And we don't deny that we feel sad when someone does pass away. But for other people, death is a time of joy. It's a joyful time. It's a crossing over to a different place. It's a spiritual completion and a holy event. For Amy, it meant getting the best gift ever. Amy was very, very close to her grandmother. They visited often. They shared some of life's most memorable moments. When she was very small, they played together and walked together. And when Amy was sick, Grandma took care of her so Mom and Dad could go to work. They loved each other in all situations and prayed together to resolve their deepest concerns, like the time when, in her adolescent clumsiness, she tripped and fell and broke her mom's very valuable vase. And the first thing she did is, "It's prayer time. This one's going to be a big one, Grandma." I believe that Amy thought that her grandma had as much to do with healing and fixing things as God did, maybe even more. And that's how much Amy trusted her grandma. Their love could withstand anything that life could throw their way. But it was inevitable. There certainly would come a time when reality and old age would gain the upper hand. This time, Grandma couldn't kiss it and make it better. Grandma couldn't pray this one away. Grandma was dying. It was her time, and what a splendid time it was. It was the spring, and the flowers were blooming, the flowers that she and Amy had attended to each year. You might think that this is a perfect time to be alive, but Grandma convinced Amy otherwise. At 91, she had lived a full life. She had no regrets, except perhaps leaving Amy. But she had taken care of that too. "Amy," she whispered quietly, "in my closet at home, there's a small wooden box. It has your name on it. It's all that I can give you. It's all that I hold dear. In that box is the secret to living a long life." No, she didn't have a fortune. She had no diamonds or pearls to pass on. What she left was her secret to life. On her final day, she called Amy to her side. They reflected back on a lifetime of love and happiness and commitment. They laughed and cried. And before saying goodbye, Grandma pulled her close, kissed her on the forehead, and gently fell into a deep and final sleep. A sleep that would take her home to the grandest celebration of all. Weeks after her passing, Amy retrieved the box from Grandma's closet. She took it out for the kitchen table where they had shared so many happy moments together. Placing the old wooden box on the table, she carefully opened it. There inside, Amy found an envelope with the words, "My secret to a long life." Her heart raced with the thought what Grandma had gone through, all this trouble just for her. She held the note close to her chest and she said out loud, "I love you, Grandma. Thanks." Inside the envelope was one index card. On it were written four words, "Live until you die." Amy roared with laughter. She ran out of the house and down the street to where her mom was. The two of them sat there and laughed until it hurt. Somewhere in that laughter, Amy and her mom decided to hold a special celebration every year. The big day was the day that Grandma died. Everyone who knew and loved Grandma would come home for the big event, no matter where life had taken them. There is a profound truth in those simple words, "For I have found many who have long ago died in spirit and hope, and yet continue to breathe." For Amy and her family, it's not a secret anymore. It's a celebration. Live until you die. Well, good morning. The title of my talk today is Immortality. This is the 8th in this series that I have been doing since the first of the year, series and called Back to Basics. Next week, we're going to take a little break from our series, and our ministerial student, Kim Grindel, who has just completed her series of classes in Homiletics 1 and Homiletics 2, and is now tasked with giving the Sunday talk, and she's going to be doing that and talking about unconditional love. The week after that, Reverend Linda will be back, and she is going to take the 9th segment in this, and she's got the juicy topic of forgiveness. Ooh. Oh, that's always a good one. Yeah. And then the final week, Reverend Linda is going to do it. She's going to do a talk on Christ consciousness. So those are the next few weeks coming up, and nanner and nanner to those of you that think we don't plan. Immortality. Wait. Holmes defined immortality as the deathless principle of being in all people. There are three major points that I'm going to talk about today. Holmes talked about immortality as a proven fact. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that. Then I'm going to talk about we are not our bodies. And lastly, I'm going to talk about dimensions of life beyond life. But first of all, immortality as a proven fact. This is what Ernest Holmes had to say. But I cannot base my hopes of immortality on the revelations of anyone but myself. So far as I am concerned, nothing can exist to me unless I am aware of it. While I believe in other men's revelations, I am sure only of my own. I look upon the belief in immortality neither as a vague dream nor a forlorn hope, but as a proven fact. And I share that with Ernest Holmes. To me, there is just too much evidence to show that there is something more. And I'll start with talking about near-death experiences. Near-death experiences have occurred in virtually every culture, in every religion, over the entire globe, and there are several threads that run through all of them. Some of the best known ones that we have today that I am aware of, Betty Jean Eady. This woman has had two near-death experiences. She came to Anchorage several years ago, and she seems to glow. There is something special about that woman, and she has seen the face of God and is here on this plane today. Secondly is Dr. Eben Alexander. He is the author of what is now a New York Times bestseller, Proof of Heaven. And his experiences are detailed so graphically, so accurately, it carries you along with it in this concept of proof of heaven. And thirdly, a man by the name of Sam Parnia, Dr. Sam Parnia, has done, it's called the AWARE Project, but one of the reasons that we can't get science behind this whole concept of near-death experiences and death is that there's no way to put a caliper on it. How do you measure it? Nobody has ever really died and came back that we could measure and do. We've got a lot of stories of it. So what Parnia has done is he did his studies in cardiac arrest units, in ICUs in hospitals where people have had heart attacks. And you've got all of the equipment there to measure all of the things and then to record what happens. And it's kind of gruesome, but they just sit around and wait for somebody to die. But they're able to get all of the measurements on them, and when they resuscitate them, they can see what has happened. And this study has gone on now over thousands and thousands of people who have died and have been resuscitated. I won't bore you with all of the details. Cliff Notes version, they did not find what they expected. But what they did find is there is something that goes on. Because after somebody has been declared medically dead, and the time that they are resuscitated, something happens. Hopefully, medical science and science will be able to find out someday. Once again, Ernest Holmes. Death loses its sting, the grave its victory, when we realize the eternity of our own being. Nature will not let us stay in one place too long. She allows us to stay just long enough to gather the experience necessary to the unfolding and the advancement of the soul. She demands the change in order that we may advance. When the change comes, we should welcome it with a smile on the lips and a song in our hearts. Live till you die. My next point is, we are not our bodies. The spirit is both birthless and deathless. The principle of life cannot know death. The experience of dying is but the laying off of an old garment and the donning of a new one. We do not need to prepare to meet God. We are meeting that divine creative force of the universe every minute of every day of our lives. Steve Jobs, you've heard of him, was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer in 2004. And as part of the diagnosis, he was informed that he had somewhere around 3 months to live. As they did further tests on him, they discovered that the form of pancreatic cancer that he had was very, very rare, and it was operable. They were able to go in then and do an operation, and he lived another 7 years before the pancreatic cancer returned, and this time it killed him. But he went through a period of time there thinking that he had a very, very short time to live. He was invited to give the commencement address at Stanford University in 2005, and one of his points in that commencement address, he talked about death, and this is what he had to say. Remembering that I'll be dead soon is the most important tool that I've ever encountered to help me make the big choices in life. Because almost everything, all external expectations, all pride, all fear of embarrassment or failure, these things just fall away in the face of death, leaving only what is truly important. Remembering that you are going to die is the best way I know to avoid the trap of thinking that you have something to lose. Live till you die. The quote that I started out with, defining immortality, was from the 1938 version of Science of Mind, our textbook. But Ernest Holmes wrote a version of that 11 years earlier. He had the original 1927 edition of Science of Mind. And in the 1927 edition, he didn't write such a universal truth as he did later in 38. He wrote more of his own opinion. And in that 1927 edition, he wrote, "Immortality means to the average person that man shall persist after the experience of physical death, retaining a full recollection of himself and the ability to recognize others." And I like that more personal observation of Holmes. We do not deny death, and we certainly grieve and miss those who die. But once again, turning to Ernest Holmes. And so we prepare not to die, but to live. The thought of death should slip from our consciousness altogether. And when this great event of the soul takes place, it should be a beautiful, sublime, a glorious experience, period. As the eagle, free from its cage, soars to its native heights, so the soul, freed from the home of heavy flesh, will rise and return unto its Father's house, naked and unafraid. Live till you die. The dimensions of life beyond life. First of all, we need to define death. What do we mean by death? And I'll do it three different ways. First of all, medical. medically defined death is when there is no brain activity as measured by an EEG electroencephalograph. So brain activity is gone. Respiration is stopped. There's no breathing. Respiratory system is shut down. And cardio is down. There is no heartbeat. So no heart, no breath, no brain, and you're classified as dead. But in religion, and this is a whole can of worms, I could do a month of sermons on this, but just taking a broad overview, religion, and I'm speaking in general, this is all of them, these are all the nine that we honor, tend to look at death as in two aspects. One is physical death, and the other is a spiritual death. The best definition that I could see from the physical standpoint actually comes from the Bible, Ecclesiastes 12:7. Then the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who made it. So basically we die, our bodies return to the earth, but our spirit goes to God. But they often also talk of a spiritual death, and they call it a second death. And there are hosts and hosts of different ways of looking at that. But what they really all boil down to is this second death, this spiritual death, is a feeling of separation from God. A man by the name of Paul M. Elliott, who preaches and teaches with a thing called Teaching the Word Ministries. It's a fairly fundamental Christian conservative movement. But he's the one that really came up with looking at a lot of these things through the idea of a physical death and a spiritual death. And he went to the Christian Bible, both the Hebrew Scriptures and the New Testament, to look at it and support some of the things that he said. But he said something that I found really profound. In neither case does the biblical definition of death, physical or spiritual, imply or entail cessation of existence. Quite the contrary. So the point that I'm coming around to here is that there is indeed something that happens after we die. We don't know what it is yet, but there is definitely something that happens after we die. Now, I don't think that any really serious discussion of immortality and death can go along without at least the mention of reincarnation. Modern Christianity, in fact, the entire Abrahamic tradition does not embrace this idea of reincarnation, at least today. There are arguments that historically it was embraced. It was addressed in 553 at the Second Council of Carthage, where it was outlawed within the teachings of the Christian church. But there are arguments on both sides saying that at one time even Christianity embraced reincarnation. The most cited example of that is in Matthew 11, verses 13 and 14, where Jesus is talking about John the Baptist, and he refers to him as the reincarnated Elijah. Well, I did a little bit of my research on that, and I went to my good source, the five Gospels, and the Jesus Seminar. And that was one of the few places where over 200 biblical scholars all agreed unanimously Jesus did not say that. That was added later by a scholar who was trying to make another point and threw that in to make a completely unrelated point. So I think this idea of reincarnation is probably up in the air somewhere, but I do believe that there is definitely something that goes on. I'll get it. I think a more accurate way of looking at this could be from the gentleman who passed on, and he arrived up at the pearly gates, and he was greeted by St. Peter, and St. Peter told him, reincarnation does exist. It's up to you. It's your choice. You can go back to the earth in any form, in anything that you would like. And a guy thought for a minute, and he said, you know, I want to go back as a stud. And St. Peter looked at him and said, certainly, if you wish, and poof, there he was in a snow tire in North Dakota. Had a joke. One of my mentors was a lady by the name of, she still is, Sandy Scott. She's an amazing lady. She worked tirelessly at the height of the AIDS epidemic in San Francisco and being with young men dying of AIDS. And she accompanied hundreds of men in their death. She came to the conclusion that we experience what we believe. She had young men that were Christians and yet gay and had AIDS and were dying. But they faced death with a confidence because they knew that Jesus was there to greet them and forgive them of their sin, and that they would spend eternity in heaven. She met other people who refuted that completely and knew that they were going to be fine in death, that they were not born wrong. And then she also met those few that believed that they were flawed and that because of that, they were going to spend eternity in hell. And they faced death in a terribly frightening way. But her conclusion was that what we believe is what we experience. I'm going to leave you with one short story. A woman took her son, who had shown an early interest in piano, to a concert to let him see a true master. And the Polish master pianist, Ignacy Paderewski, was going to be in town, and she got tickets, front row tickets. And she and her son arrived for this performance. She happened to be seated next to her friend, and she turned to her friend and started to talk with her friend, kind of ignored her young son on the other side. The house lights go down, stage lights go up, all eyes are focused to the stage, and she looked up, and to her horror, her six-year-old had gotten out of his seat, had crawled up to the stage, and was sitting at the piano. Oh, she was mortified. She didn't know what to do, whether to jump up and run and grab him or what. And then he began to plunk out, "Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star." And at that moment, the master, Paderewski, stepped out from the church, and he immediately walked straight to the piano. And he walked up behind the little boy, and he whispered in his ear, and he said, "Don't quit. Keep playing. Don't quit. Keep playing." And the little guy's kind of trembling there, knees are shaking, and he's still "Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star." And the master reaches around with his left hand and started filling in a bass part. And then he reached around with his right hand, encircling this little boy, and filled in a running obbligato. And then with the young novice and the old master together, they mesmerized the house. People were stunned at the beauty of this. And I submit that we are a lot like that little boy. We're novices in the world. But behind us, there is an unseen, infinite intelligence. There is that creative power of the universe that is always with us, that is expressing itself through and as us in this plane, in the next plane, and in every plane we're in, whispering in our ear, don't quit, keep playing, don't quit, keep playing. I submit that it's best for us to just sit back and work on our twinkle, twinkle little star and allow the Master to surround us. And so with that idea of being supported by something greater, I'd like to invite my colleagues, the practitioners, to join me in holding our congregation in love and light, knowing that this infinite power, this infinite intelligence, the creative force of the universe, God, Spirit, is indeed always with us, is indeed always part of us, is indeed always whispering in our ear, don't quit, keep playing. And it is only up to us to step back and invite the support of that infinite intelligence, to accept the help of the Master, knowing that as we face the challenges in our lives, whether they be financial, whether they be relationships, whether it be health, we have something greater than we are with us at this and every moment. And I speak my word now for all those experiencing health challenges, knowing that the surgeon's hands are no different than the hands of the divine. The surgeon's hands are guided. The love that we share, the love that we put out, is just like the audience loving that magnificent piece. I also speak my word now for each and every person who is experiencing a relationship issue, knowing that God's love is the truth, and God's love does indeed prevail. And so I just now give thanks. I give thanks for my awareness of the power and the presence of God in me and in all situations. I give thanks for the completion of this perfect power, this perfect symphony of life, knowing that it does not stop at death, that it goes on into the next and the next and the next plane, forever and ever expanding. And so I just give thanks. I release these words, the working of law. I let it go, I let it be, and so it is.